Blog Talk Radio.
Communication lines are being stalled on the island for the president's use. It's
unclear why the president is returning home on the 18th, so the school where his daughters attend, Sidwell Friends, says that is when practice for winter sports begins. Both Malia and Sasha play basketball, just like their dad. Isn't that cute?
Yeah. Well, anyway.
Do you have what you wanted?
Yeah, I got a couple of things I wanted to read tonight. One is the NSA defense unmasks democratic establishment. This was really an interesting article somebody sent me today. And, NSA defense unmasks the democratic establishment. One of the worst myths democratic partisans love to tell themselves and everyone else is that the GOP refuses to support President Obama no matter what he does. Like its close cousin, the massively deceitful inside D.C. grievance that the two parties refuse to cooperate on anything is the hard to overstate how false this democratic myth is. When it comes to foreign policy, war assassination, drones, surveillance, secrecy, and civil liberties, President Obama's most stalwart enthusiastic defenders are often found among the most radical precincts of the Republican Party.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
They don't fight over that.
The rapidly pro-war and anti-Muslim GOP former chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee, Peter King,
has
reportedly lavished Obama with all sorts of praise and support for his policies in those areas. The Obama White House frequently needs and receives large amounts of GOP congressional support to have its measures enacted or bills it dislikes defeated. The Obama Department of Justice often prevails before the U.S. Supreme Court solely because the Robert Scalia Thomas factions adopts its view, while the Ginsburg Sotomayor and Breyer factions reject it. Now, this tells you that Obama is a goddamn conservative dictator, all right? That's
well,
what
go
he
ahead.
Is.
Finish
all right?
Reading. See what...
this is an amazing thing, okay? And he's a freaking fraud. And by a 5-4 ruling dismissed of a lawsuit brought by Amnesty and the ACLU, which argued that the NSA's domestic warrantless eavesdropping activities violated the Fourth Amendment, the Robert Scalia wing accepted the Obama DOJ as argument that the plaintiffs lacked standing to sue because the NSA successfully concealed the identity of which Americans are subjected to the surveillance, as Wired put it at the time about the NSA ruling. A 5-4 decision by Justice Samuel Alito was a clear victory for the... I mean, Samuel Alito is the biggest mother, jerk, suck-off guy you've ever seen in your life. Okay, for the President Obama, please go to my website and we'll check out Samuel Alito is all we need. Okay, article. It was a clear victory for the President Obama, Barack Obama administration, which, like its predecessors, argued that government wiretapping laws cannot be challenged in court. The extraordinary event that took place in the House of Representatives yesterday was perhaps the most vivid illustration yet of this dynamic, and it independently reveals several other important trends. The House voted on an amendment sponsored by Justin Amash, the young Michigan lawyer elected in 2010 as a Tea Party candidate, and co-sponsored by John Conyers, the 24-term senior Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee. The amendment was simple. It would defund one single NSA program, the agency's bulk collection of the telephone records of all Americans that we first revealed in this space back in June 6th. And it accomplished this by requiring the FISA court.
FISA court.
Yeah. Under Section 215 of the Patriot Act to order the production of records that pertain only to a person under investigation. The amendment yesterday was defeated, but it lost by only 12 votes, 2005 to 2017, given that the amendment sought to defund a major domestic surveillance program of the NSA. The very close vote was nothing short of shocking. In fact, in post-9/11 world, amendments like this, which directly challenge the surveillance of national security states, almost never get votes at all. That the GOP House leadership was forced to allow it to reach the floor, was a sign of how much things have changed over the last 7 weeks.
More significant than the closeness of the vote was its breakdown. A majority of House Democrats supported the Amash-Kanya's amendment, while the majority of Republicans voted against it. The full roll call vote is here, so you can look that up. House Speaker John Boehner saved the Obama White House by voting against it and ensuring that his top leadership whipped against it. As the New York Times put it in the account of yesterday's vote, conservative Republicans, leery of what they see as Obama administration abuses of power, teamed up with liberal Democrats long opposed to intrusive intelligence programs. The Obama administration made common cause with the House Republican leadership to try to block it. In reality, the fate of the amendment was sealed when the Obama White House on Monday night announced its vehement opposition to it, and then sent NASA officials to the House to scare members that barring the NASA from collecting all phone records of all Americans would help the terrorists. Yeah, right.
Using
Orwellian language so extreme to be darkly hilarious, this was the first line of the White House statement opposing the amendment. In light of the recent unauthorized disclosures, the president has said that he welcomes a debate about how to best simultaneously safeguard both our national security and the privacy of our citizens. We welcome the debate that has been exclusively enabled by that vile traitor, the same debate we spent years trying to prevent with rampant abuse of our secrecy powers that has kept even the most basic facts about our spying activities concealed from the American public.
The White House then condemned Amash Conyers this way. This blunt approach is not the product of an informed, open, or deliberative process. What a multi-level masterpiece of Orwellian political deceit that sentence is. The highly surgical Amash-Kanya's amendment, which would eliminate a single specific NSA program of indiscriminate domestic spying, is a blunt approach. But the Obama NSA bulk indiscriminate collection of all American telephone records is not a blunt approach. Even worse, Amash Conyers, a House bill debated in public and then voted on in public, is not an open or deliberative process. As opposed to the Obama administration's secret spying activities in the secret court that blesses its secret interpretation of the law, which is open and deliberative,
anyone can write
a statement like the one that came from the Obama White House without dying of shame or giggles is impressive.
Even more notable than the Obama White House defense of NASA's bulk domestic spying was the behavior of the House Democratic leadership. Not only did they all vote against defunding the NASA bulk domestic spying program that includes liberal icon House Democrat leader Nancy Pelosi, who voted to protect the NASA's program, but Pelosi's deputy, Steny Hoyer, whipped against the bill by channeling the warped language and mentality of Dick Cheney. This is the language the Democratic leadership circulated while telling their members to reject Amash Conyers. Amash Conyers Mulvaney Polis Massey Amendment. That's quite a mouthful.
Bars
the NASA and other agencies from using Section 215 of the Patriot Act to collect records, including telephone call records, that pertain to persons who may be in communication with terrorist groups, but are not already subject to an investigation under Section 215.
And remember, when Democrats used to object to earnestly when Dick Cheney would scream, the terrorists, every time someone tried to rein in the national security state just a bit so modestly to protect basic civil liberties. And how well they have learned now a bill to ban the government from collecting the telephone records of all Americans, while expressly allowing it to collect the records of anyone for whom this is evidence of wrongdoing. is in the language of the House Democratic leadership a bill to protect the terrorists. And none of this should be surprising. Remember, this is the same Nancy Pelosi who spent years during the Bush administration pretending to be a vehement opposer of the illegal Bush NSA warrantless eavesdropping program after it was revealed by the New York Times, even though just as was true of the Bush torture program, she was secretly briefed on many years earlier when it was first implemented. At the end of June, she published the top secret...
The
top secret draft of the Inspector General's Office of the NSA that was required to provide a comprehensive history of the NSA warrantless eavesdropping program secretly ordered by the Bush in late 2001. That report included this passage.
Within the first 30 days of the program, over 190 people were cleared into the program. This number included Senators Robert Graham and Richard Shelby, Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi, President George W. Bush, Vice President Richard Cheney, counsel to the Vice President David Addington, and Presidential Assistant I. Lewis Scooter Libby. So the history of the Democratic leaders, such as Nancy Pelosi, isn't one of opposition to mass NASA spying when Bush was in office, only to change positions now that Obama is. The history is of pretend opposition, of deceiving their supporters by feigning opposition while actually supporting
these people
it.
Are so deceptive, and this Pelosi is such a bitch of hell. Okay.
But the most notable aspect of events was the debate on the House floor. The most vocal defenders of the Obama's White House position were Representative Mike Rogers, the hawkish GOP chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, and GOP Congresswoman Bachman.
She sided with Michelle Bachman. Can you imagine
echoing
that?
Echoing the Democratic House leadership. Bachman repeatedly warned that NASA bulk spying was necessary to stop Islamic jihadists. And she attacked Republicans who supported defunding for rendering the nation vulnerable to the terrorists.
It says, in between these denunciations of Obama's NSA from House liberals, some of the most conservative members of the House stood to read from the Fourth Amendment. Perhaps the most amazing moment came when GOP Representative James Sensenbrenner, the prime author of the Patriot Act back in 2001 and a longtime defender of war on terror policies under both Bush and Obama, stood up to say that the NSA's domestic bulk spying far exceeds the bounds of the law, he wrote, as well as his belief in the proper limits of domestic surveillance, and announced his support for Amash Conyers. Sensenbrenner was then joined in voting to defund the NSA program by House liberals such as Barbara Lee, Rush Holt, James Clyburn, Nydia Velazquez, Alan Grayson, and Keith Ellison. And meanwhile, in the Senate, Democrat Ron Wyden continues to invoke unusually harsh language to condemn what the NSA is doing under Obama. Here is some of what he said in a speech this week at the Center of the American Progress is reported on the Hill.
This just goes on and on, Leo. We could be reading it forever.
Yeah. Well, no, it only goes on two more paragraphs.
Okay, so, no, three or four more.
Well, it's worth reading because this is such a violation of health.
This is what he said. Representative Ron Wyden on Tuesday urged the United States to revamp its surveillance laws and practices, warning the country will live to regret it if it fails to do so. If we do not seize this unique moment in our Constitution history to reform our surveillance laws and practices, we will live to regret it. The combination of increasingly advanced technology with a breakdown in the checks and balances that limit government action could lead us to a surveillance state that cannot be reversed, he added. The government has essentially kept people under the dark about the broad interpretations of the law, he said. Wyden tells constituents that there are two Patriot Acts, one they read online at home, and the secret interpretation of the law that the government is actually relying upon. If Americans are not able to learn how their government is interpreting and executing the law that we have, are definitely eliminated the most important bulwark of our democracy, he says. This means that government's authority to collect information on law-abiding American citizens is essentially limitless, he says.
Wyden's full speech, in which he makes clear that it is solely the disclosures of the last 7 weeks that have enabled this debate and brought about a massive shift in public opinion, is remarkable and can be read here. That a senior Democrat and a member of Senate Intelligence Committee sounding exactly like Edward Snowden and the ACLU in denouncing the abuses of American surveillance state. Meanwhile, as soon as the House vote was over, Representative Rush Holt, a longtime Democrat, member of the House Intelligence Committee, introduced the Surveillance State Repeal Act that would repeal the legislative foundation for this massive spying, including the once and now again controversial Patriot Act, which the Obama administration in 2011 successfully had renewed without single reform. After Democrat Harry Reid accused opponents of its reform-free renewal of endangering the nations to the terrorists. To say that there is major sea change underway, not just in terms of surveillance policy, but broader issues of secrecy, trust in national security institutions and civil liberties, is to say the obvious. But perhaps the most significant and enduring change will be the erosion of the tried prism of partisan simplicity. Tripartisan simplicity through which American politics has been understood over the last decade. What one sees in this debate is not Democrat versus Republican or left versus right. One sees authoritarian versus individualism, fealty to the national security state versus a belief in the need to constrain and check it, inside Washington's loyalty versus outer dependence.
That's why the only defenders of the NASA at this point are the decaying establishment leadership of both political parties, whose allegiance is to the sprawling permanent power factions in Washington and the private industry that owns and controls it. They're aligned against longtime liberals, the new breed of small government conservatives, the ACLU, and other civil liberties groups, many of their own members, and increasingly the American people, who have grown tired of and immune to the relentless fear-mongering. The sooner the myth of intractable partisan warfare is dispelled, the better. The establishment leadership of the two parties collaborate on far more than they fight. That is a basic truth that needs to be understood. As John Boehner joined with Nancy Pelosi, as Eric Cantor whipped support for the Obama White House, as Michelle Bachmann and Peter King stood with Steny Hoyer to attack NASA, critics as
terrorist lovers
yesterday was a significant step toward accomplishing that.
So these guys are all traitors. They're all AWAPES, and you know, I'm going to tell you folks, you got to get rid of this establishment crap, all right? This Pelosi's and Cantor's and all of these jerks. It's unbelievable, isn't it? Isn't it unbelievable, Lila? Are you going to believe it?
Hard to believe, except you read it and see it.
Well, here's something even more hard to believe.
What a group
of people. You're going to read this one. I think you already did. Did you read this one? Groundbreaking investigation.
This is from Natural News. And
yeah,
they
and you
got to
you know
stuff.
The interesting thing is they Monsanto bought out Blackwater. They own
Blackwater. I know that. Yeah.
All right, Blackwater Security. So you know, but groundbreaking investigations reveal Monsanto is teaming up with U.S. military to target GMO activists. Imagine that. All right, a hard-hitting investigation report recently published by a prominent German newspaper has uncovered some shocking details about the tactics being used by chemical giant Monsanto in assuming control of global agriculture. According to this thorough analysis, Monsanto appears to be aggressively targeting independent researchers, scientists, activists, and others opposed to genetically modified organisms by utilizing the vast resources and manpower of both the United States federal government and the American military-industrial complex.
That's what we've always done.
No, but I mean, it's like mammoth. Okay, the report, which recently appeared in the July 13th print edition of
Sol Deutsche Zeitung explains in rigorous detail how both individuals and groups opposed to GMOs and other chemical-based crop technologies have been threatened, hacked, slandered, and terrified for daring to digress from the pro-GMO status quo. On numerous documented occasions, pertinent information about the dangers of GMOs, a lack of GMO safety data, has been effectively blocked from timely release by mysterious forces that many say are the chemical industry in disguise.
A conspicuously large number of Monsanto critics report regular attacks by professional hackers, explains an English translated snippet from the SZ report. There are Monsanto ties with the U.S. Secret Services, the U.S. military, which very hard operating private security companies, and of course with the U.S. government. A telling example of this was when the European environmental group Friends of the Earth, together with the German Environmental and Nature Protection Association, was targeted prior to releasing a damning study on the health damaging effects of glyphosate, the primary active ingredient in Monsanto's Roundup herbicide. A mysterious virus infected the computer of the study's main organizers just days before publishing, which threatened to delay several important press releases.
The distinguished GMO Truth website GMWatch.org has been relentlessly targeted with cyber attacks since at least 2007, a disturbing trend that the site's main editor is convinced originates from the biotechnology industry. As reported back in 2012, some of the strongest attacks against the site came just weeks and days before the historic Proposition 37 vote in California, which would have mandated GMO labeling at the retail level. As it turns out, Monsanto has many close friends within the ranks of the U.S. federal government these days. Sources of key government positions, in fact, are now held by former Monsanto executives, a strategic move that has given the multinational corporation exclusive access to the types of resources necessary to carry out cyber attacks against its opponents on a massive scale.
It's a serpentine company. All of its tentacles are into the government. Obama is one of the biggest testicles, okay, in this thing, and it should be neutered.
Monsanto's own executives have even admitted in the years past that so-called cyber warfare is necessary for the purpose of protecting its own economic interests, both domestically and abroad. Imagine the Internet as a weapon sitting on a table. Former Monsanto head of public relations, Jay Byrne, is quoted as saying back in 2001, either you use it or your opposition does, but somebody's going to get killed. These are powerful words, and one that ring increasingly true as reports continue to emerge about Monsanto's intimidatory tactics against foreign governments that refuse its offering. Confidential documents recently made public through WikiLeaks, for example, reveal the plan by government officials to retaliate against nations that refuse to accept GMOs, even when the people of those nations wanted nothing to do with that technology. All the sordid details of the U.S. government's collusion activities with the biotechnology industry are available in the full English translated SZ report, which you can read here.
Which is http://sustainablepulse.com.
Or go to Natural News and pop up this article.
naturalnews.com. Excellent source. So, guys, it's unbelievable.
And this is on Monsanto and GMO. So let's give the name of the article so if people go to Natural News.
It's called Groundbreaking Investigation Reveals Monsanto Teaming Up with U.S. Military to Target GMO Activists.
It's scary.
You know, there's so many things that just kill me, you know. Society's insanity is the real cause behind global mass poisoning and the downfall of modern civilization. Let's read this. What's your name?
This is by Mike Adams. The Health Ranger.
Yeah. Boy. Society's insanity plea, the real cause behind global mass poisoning and the downfall of modern civilization. There are over 5,000 species of mammals on planet Earth, but only one of them is insane. It also turns out there is only one species of mammal that intentionally poisons itself and its children by injecting toxic, neurodamaging chemicals into most members of its species. That species is, of course, Homo sapiens. If you look around the planet these days, you see tens of thousands of species of mammals, birds, reptiles, and even insects. Five things all these have in common is none of them eat processed foods. They innately eat raw, unprocessed, uncooked foods from nature.
None of them take prescription medications.
None of them inject their offspring with toxic vaccines laced with hidden chemicals.
None of them practice mechanized chemical agriculture, monoculture.
And none of them live in delusional, artificial worlds of TV or the internet.
Yet humans, the most insane species on the planet, routinely engages in all five of these things, poisoning their own bodies, minds, and children with heavy metals, pesticides, mercury, vaccine adjuvants, and mind-altering medications, chemical solvents, GMOs, and delusional mind programming. It's not really a surprise to see where this brings us, to say our society is dominated by images of power-hungry perverts like Anthony Weiner running for mayor, or pathological liars in the White House, diabolically imbalanced artists like Lady Gaga headlining the music scene, brain-dead teleprompter readers delivering the evening news, and MSNBC hosts preaching infanticide by calling it post-birth abortion.
This guy is so right on. What is the root cause of all this insanity? It's poison. Physical, chemical, and biological poison. Humans are poisoning themselves to death. And consider these shocking truths of modern society. Our food is intentionally laced with chemical poisons to make it look red, sodium nitrate, or taste savory MSG, or taste last longer on the shelves, chemical preservatives. Our medicines are laced with fluorine molecules to make them highly reactive to brain cells.
Huh?
Our vaccines are formulated with trace levels of brain-damaging methyl mercury and chemical adjuvants to provoke an inflammatory response in the immune system, which also happens to cause autism, seizures, and brain damage.
Our lawns are sprayed with synthetic poisons that cause Alzheimer's and depression.
Our
water supply is used as a toxic waste dump to dispose of fluoride compound chemicals that would otherwise have to be handled as toxic waste.
Food intended for human consumption is intentionally stripped of most minerals, vitamins, and nutrients to promote the maximum disease, while food intended for ranch animals' consumption is fortified with minerals, vitamins, and nutrients to promote maximum health. If you don't realize your food is stripped of nutrition, ask yourself why your sugar and bread are both white when the plants they come from are green and brown.
The media teaches the public that nutrition is useless, but the prescription medications are essential nutrients required for healthy living.
There is lead in cosmetics, cadmium in rice, arsenic in seaweed, mercury in vaccines, and aluminum in almost everything. The human race is being heavily poisoned with heavy metals. These toxins cause brain damage.
The cumulative effect of metal poisoning, fluoride poisoning, pesticide poisoning, vaccine poisoning, and food additive poisoning is biochemical brain damage. We are living in a society where 90% or more of the population is literally brain damaged beyond repair That is why irrationality has gone wild everywhere you look. It's why people keep buying the same poisons they have already poisoned them with, turning to medications to mask the symptoms of that poisoning, thereby poisoning themselves even further with the medications. I know it's
awful. Why the number one treatment for cancer is a chemical cocktail called chemotherapy, which causes, as a stop side effect, more cancer. And it's why a rapidly expanding subset of the population is now utterly unable to read, to parse words, to speak in coherent sentences, or even to engage in anything resembling rational discourse. Well, that's true. And the ramifications of this epidemic of brain damage are bewildering. For starters, the entire system of justice and democracy upon which our republic is based is contingent upon people being sane. The sacred concept of a jury of your peers depends on your peers being sane. The idea of voting for public office also requires sane voters in order to achieve sane outcomes. And the free market system of capitalism and consumer choice assumes that consumers make rational decisions to drive that market. But they don't. Consumers are brain damaged, then brainwashed, dumbed down, and manipulated. And voters are deluded and intentionally confused. Juries are manipulated and misinformed. In every sector of society, there is a group of sane people who was supposed to restore balance and reason. We now have insane people driving society even further into the ground.
We are living in an era of metal poisoning, chemicals poisoning, and information poisoning.
You know, I wrote an article just like this about 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. It's on my website.
Never before in the history of the world has the toxic burden on human beings been so great and tragic. Never before has the chasm between the sane and the insane become so wide and so dangerous. We are living in an era where rationality is alien to the masses. As a very simple example, it matters nothing to the voters that Obama has violated virtually every single campaign promise he made in the elections, including labeling GMOs, closing Guantanamo Bay, reducing the high federal deficit, protecting whistleblowers, improving government transparency, providing affordable government health care, and protecting the Constitution.
He destroyed every one of those promises.
Yeah.
And he has grossly violated each and every one of these promises, yet his supporters somehow continue to believe him. Such a belief is utterly irrational.
They've been drinking the cocktail.
Yeah. It is, in fact, insane. But it is no more insane than the beliefs of those who blindly supported the Bush administration. He's absolutely right. Or the Clinton administration,
uh-huh.
or any administration for that matter. What blind supporters all have in common is that they are brain damaged and therefore unable to think rationally. The situation has become so perverse that anyone who believes even a trace of rationality is immediately and publicly despised. For example, those who see the impending economic collapse, such as Paul Craig, Roberts, and Gerald Celente, are widely ridiculed for understanding economics and finance. And those who see the rapid construction of the police state society taking place right now, like Alex Jones, are branded conspiracy theorists. And those who expose the dangers of GMO or the criminality of the pharmaceutical industry, like myself, are branded anti-science because we aren't tricked by the quack science dogma of the for-profit biotech industry.
Only brain damaged people are now considered normal because that's what is publicly accepted. As a personal example of this, I have a younger distant relative who was a mathematical genius in grade school. He could multiply 2 3-digit numbers in his head in mere seconds and was on the track to becoming a math genius superstar. But as he entered middle school, he discovered that being smart made you unpopular. So he dumbed himself down and began to act stupid in order to fit in. He became very popular with the in crowd and abandoned his mathematical genius. To this day, he has never resurrected his genius, and yet he falls for the common delusion of today's youth who all believe they will have jobs waiting for me when they get out of college. The truth is that this kid gave up his only real advantage and now faces a life of mediocrity and conformity. This is the problem. When the incidence of brain damage across society is so widespread that exhibiting intelligent behavior gets you shunned as an outcast, society is already in its final stage of collapse. You are watching it unfold.
Why Americans of the 1950s were our greatest generation. Adults who ran society in the 1950s were raised on real foods in the 1920s and 30s. Those foods consisted in part of fresh homegrown garden foods. GMOs didn't exist. Toxic vaccines were barely on the radar. And chemical food additives were rarely consumed. And pharmaceuticals were considered medicines to be exclusively on sick people, not the entire population. As a result, most people who lived in the 1950s strived to be healthy and intelligent. Many were outright geniuses by today's standards. His grade school mathematics taught in the 1950s included subjects that today are college courses. Algebra and basic geometry, for example, 10-year-old kids in the 1950s could read classic American novels.
That's
today,
true.
Kids can barely read comic books. Engineers and scientists of the 1950s were brilliant, healthy, and hip, with nothing more than simple mechanical slide rules. They could perform high-level mathematics that would make today's college professors cower in awe. But today's scientists are often just corporate hacks spewing fraudulent science on patented medications or GMO seeds.
In the late 1940s and throughout the 1950s, Big Food cranked up its factories, churning out processed, nutrient-depleted foods at a pace never seen before, witnessed in history of human civilization. So the kids of the 60s got raised on imitation foods, things that looked and tasted nutritious but lacked any real nourishment. By the 1970s, they were all eating white bread and getting shot up with vaccines formulated with hidden cancer vaccines like SV40. As the 1980s rolled in, Americans who were raised on imitation foods became pathetic and lazy. In the 1990s, they became delusional, falling for the dot-com boom, which soon became a bust. By the early 2000s, America had fully entered brain damage mode, which was only exacerbated by the arrival of George
W. Bush. Yeah, there you go. Oh, that's true.
The nation's first fully, truly
brain-dead
president. Who had difficulty completing sentences or finishing thoughts, which is apparently what made him so popular for voters, who shared the same partner.
That's absolutely right. Oh, man, finally they explain this. The children, I wrote about this 10 years ago. The children raised in the early 1990s on prescription medication and junk food are now society's young voters. They're Obama supporters, and they're heavily damaged with metals, pesticides, vaccines, GMOs, and synthetic chemicals. The generation is wholly incapable of learning or grasping even basic concepts of mathematics, history, science, or even, oh, that is so true. Functionally illiterate and cognitively nullified, they are the new zero-class workers upon which Obama economy is based. They have no skills, no reason, and essentially no value to society other than simply manual labor skills, which will soon be replaced by humanoid robots. Here in America, they still have a vote. That's exactly why political campaigns will continue to pander to their ignorance, defying all rationality and requests for proxy popular support from the great masses of the truly clueless.
Rush Limbaugh calls these people the low information voters, but he's only half right about that. They aren't merely low information, they're clinically brain damaged because you can throw all the information you want at them, but none of it sticks. The brain no longer possesses neurology to store, process, and retrieve meaningful information. In effect, they are no longer functioning members of a civilized society.
You are surrounded by brain damaged masses.
These people are everywhere around you, sitting on your local city council, taking your order at the restaurant, shuffling paperwork at the local insurance business office, pouring the concrete slab for your next house, and even diagnosing your health symptoms at the local clinic. They are the society you see around you, and they are the reason the society is crumbling. They are victims, of course, victims of the deadly scientific dogma of chemicals, GMOs, quack medicines, and toxic vaccines. The damage, however, is now so widespread, so complete, that society will never recover. From here, it's all downhill with the lobotomized masses until society hits bottom and a massive die-off ensues.
One day, rationally, an intelligence will once again be valued as attributed to admire and encourage in our youth. When that day comes, you will be witnessing the rebirth of a civilization that rises from the ashes of our present-day brain-damaged society. Historians will consider the era from 2000 to 2020 to be the most bizarre in human history. Of course, where broken neurology led to broken societies, and ultimately to global collapse, caused the mass die-off. The lessons in all this, when food is no longer nutritive, and instead becomes a carrier of poison, society cannot survive. If you want to fix society, you have to fix the food first.
So he's got a good point there.
Yeah, that was a great article. I have to admire him for that. I mean,
that was the health ranger, Mike Adams.
Yeah, that was the health ranger.
He's great.
You know, naturalnews.com. And, you know, I have to agree. I wrote about this years ago, and we've been talking about this on radio so many years. But, you know, people have just unbelievable, you know. I want to go to this one here. Snowden's HARP global assassination agenda.
Snowden revealed HARP.
Yeah.
This is from the Internet Chronicle.
Snowden reveals the HARP.
Whoops.
Jeez. See, we just got spiked again, folks. And
yep.
I don't know if can you go ahead and
look,
you're
me,
on it right
let
there.
Me see, yeah.
I think you're on it right here. Oh no, that was my
Facebook.
Oh God, I have to tell you. Oh, why don't you read this one? This is a very excellent one on the DARPA program.
That's on DNA.
That's what's happening right now. You didn't read it.
I read it myself.
This
is from TruthStream Media. By Aaron Dykes and Melissa Melton. We're no molecular biologists over here, but have you ever seen the sci-fi Gattaca? In the 1997 film, society is structured around eugenics, as people are bioengineered to be perfect specimens. And one's entire life and position in the world is based on their genetics. Those conceived naturally without genetic screening are proclaimed invalid and only allowed menial jobs, despite the innate talents and skills they may possess. Alternately, the 2011 movie In Time portrays a dystopic future where humans are genetically programmed to stop aging at 25 and could live forever, so long as they earn enough time credits to afford to stay alive. The poor perish swiftly under an artificially skyrocketing cost of living that times out their clocks, while the rich who steer their technocracy are gaming the system and living indefinitely. Such nightmarish scenarios place obvious restrictions on the natural right to live, to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Back in reality, alarmingly similar ends are being pursued. DARPA, the Department of Defense Research Arm, has just put out a new solicitation for a project called Advanced Tools for Mammalian Genome Engineering on the government's Federal Small Business Innovation Research site. The project isn't just for engineering any mammal's genomes, however. It's specifically for bioengineering humans. The proposal explains the project's details. The ability to deliver exogenous DNA mammalian cell lines is a fundamental tool in the development of advanced therapeutics, vaccines, and cellular diagnostics, as well as for basic biological and biomedical research. The successful development of technologies for rapid induction of large DNA vectors into human cell lines will enable the ability to engineer much more complex functionalities into human cell lines than are currently possible. And this is another quote. A human artificial chromosome is a microchromosome that can act as a new chromosome in a population of human cells. That is, instead of 46 chromosomes, the cell could have 47. The 47th being roughly very small, roughly 6-10 megabytes in size, and able to carry new genes introduced by human researchers. Oh my God, they're playing God. It's really kind of scary. So DARPA and its team of associate scientists wants to introduce an entirely new 47th chromosome into human genetics as a vector platform by inserting bio-alterations and wholesale genetic improvements into our DNA. The agency hopes that the development of a new chromosome will allow a solution to the limitations of the current state-of-the-art gene transfer technology, including plasmids, adenovirus, and lentivirus, and retrovirus vectors. I'm not sure what this means. In mini-gene constructs. The proposal explains that existing approaches must be improved due to known drawbacks in the scientists' failure to control their results, causing actually a few major problems. These include random DNA insertion into the host genome, variation in stable integration sites between cell lines, variation in the copy number and expression level of DNA that is delivered, limitations on number and size of DNA constructs that can be delivered, and immunological responses to foreign DNA. I mean, this is all a little... I think you really need to read it yourself to process it better. And this is from TruthStream Media, DARPA to genetically engineer humans by adding a 47th chromosome. Let me go to the final paragraph and see if that sums it up. Through DARPA, our government funds a laundry list of projects to gain technocratic control of the future. That reads more like a summary of the latest sci-fi horror film plots. Case in point, just today, Activist Post reported, secret DARPA mind control project revealed. When looking at one DARPA project to perfect mind control techniques, or a second DARPA project to study human hormone oxytocin to improve our response to government propaganda, or a third DARPA brain interface project that would literally turn soldiers into cyborgs, it's creepy enough. However, when looking at all of these projects together as a combined effort, it raises chilling questions as to what kind of dystopic, technocratic future they are forcing us into. These developments only include a small sampling of what we know is admittedly going on. Who knows what is actually taking place behind the scenes? Exactly how many far-reaching and potentially disastrous implications of our government literally playing God are there? Now, that's a good question, isn't it? That's a scary group. How are you doing, Leah? Did it come back?
Yeah, I got it back. Interesting article. I don't usually like stuff that Rand Paul talks about, you know, but I got a little item here that I've got sent me.
This guy is from Kentucky.
It's about 4 minutes. It's about Rand Paul speaks out against senators who vote without reading the bill.
Yeah, well, that's happened with Obamacare, the Patriot Act.
And now this has had 1,392,000 visitors. Views.
Good. So people
are and people are beginning to realize what kind of Congress we have, right? It's only 4 minutes. You think we should read it?
I think we should.
We got a few minutes left, so I think this was a really.
Currently, Congress has about a 10% approval rate. One of the reasons is we don't even obey our own rules. For goodness sakes, 600-page bill, and I got it this morning. Not one member of the Senate will read this bill before we vote on it. We're going to vote on this in the next 30 minutes. I and Senator Lee and others will object to this. We'll have a point of order that our own rules say that it has to be posted online for 48 hours. 600 pages. No one will read it. No wonder our approval rating is 10%. Nobody knows what we're voting on. In fact, things have been stuck in this bill last night that have nothing to do with any of these bills, and they've been stuck in, and we're just now discovering it. I passed two senators in the hall going back to their office, still trying to get out something that's been written into this bill that affects their state that they found out minutes ago. Had they not found out about it, nobody would have known about it. Three bills that are in question here, transportation bill, student loan bill. The student loan bill, originally we had the loans at 6%, and it was somehow bringing in money to the Treasury. We were using that money to pay for Obamacare. Now it's at 3%, that money's gone. Where's the money to pay for Obamacare? We have a shell game up here. We say one thing's going to pay for it, now this is going to pay for it. Money disappears. Now what they're saying is they're going to pay for this by taking money out of pensions. Raise your hand if you think it's a good idea to underfund pensions more. Over half of the pensions in this country are technically insolvent because they don't have enough money to pay for them. Is it a good idea to have less money go into workers' pensions to pay for a student loan program? I have a bill in Congress that says we should read the bills before we pass them. It says that we should wait one day for each 20 pages. So we'd be given time to read 600-page bills. But at the very least, we ought to adhere to our own rules. Our rules say that it should be posted online at least 48 hours. 48 hours is still a challenge to find out everything in here. You know how long the Federal Register is? It's 55,000 pages added annually. It's hundreds of thousands of pages. So when you read this, you have to refer to the Federal Register that's hundreds of thousands of pages to find out what they've stuck in this bill in the dead of night. This isn't the way we should operate. The American people want to know, why do we all of a sudden say, oh, the government's going to shut down if we don't do something in 3 days? Well, what were they doing for the previous 3 months? What's going on up here? The other side hasn't produced a budget in 3 years. That's against the rules. The rules of the Senate say you must produce a budget, and they didn't do it for 3 years. When we presented them with their own budget that we wrote for them, nobody voted for it. Zero on the other side of the aisle voted for their own president's budget. How are we going to get to compromise if they're not showing up for work? How are we going to get anything done if they don't obey their own rules? I'm discouraged by this. I will raise a point of order in the next hour that says we have broken the rules of the Senate, and I will ask them to vote on it. I fully expect the parliamentarian will rule in our favor. We'll see. But then the other side will simply close their eyes to the rules. They won't care what the parliamentarian says, and they will just overturn this by saying, we are the majority, and we deem it so. We are the majority. We don't care what's in the bills. We don't care to take the time to read the bills. We are in the majority, and we deem it so. I think this is why the American people are unhappy with what's going on in this body. I object strenuously to it. I will vote against this, and I will raise a point of order that says we should read the bills before we pass them. Thank you, Mr. President.
This guy makes a lot of sense. I wasn't sure, but he sure does make a lot of sense. So, I'm voting with a bill. This was actually in 6/29/12. That was a year ago.
Wow.
That he said this. My God. Yeah. It takes a year to get this information, you know. It is now 1 minute before we close the show, but I want to thank everybody who joined us tonight.
And what about the article we started? Is that what you started to read that was shut off?
What was that?
The one where you got a spike.
I don't remember which article we were on, but I think we got through it. I'm not sure. I don't remember which one it was.
The one that somebody had sent you, I was
going to
just give the name.
Oh, this is great. Yeah, let's see. Oh, by the way, it's bullshit about Bradley Manning convicted on 19 charges and could face up to, 100 years in jail. But, oh, no, he wasn't convicted of the big one, you know.
But he could be there forever.
Yeah, exactly. So what a joke. Yeah, it's just a joke. You know. And there was a guy who was a patriot.
Yeah. Didn't want to spread misery around the world. Oh, gee, shame on him, right?
He wanted to prove that we were, you know, what was happening in that miserable Iraq and everywhere else, and all the wars that we were undertaking. I'm going to ask you to go to adguk.blog.com. NASA, the end of mankind as we know it is according to NASA. Okay, it's future warfare documentary.
Okay.
That was another one that I wanted to know. So much stuff up there. We'll cover more of it tomorrow, so please join us tomorrow night when we we'll discuss immunity issues, but we'll also be discussing a lot more of this stuff. So please join us tomorrow. Thank you for joining us tonight, and have a good evening.
Yeah, thanks for being with us, folks. Good night.